Hey Gators and sports fans, get all your Gator talk, news, analysis, and opinions on the Pod Up with Matthews in the Morning podcast. Find us on your favorite podcast platform or watch us on Facebook Live between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. every weekday. Pod Up, because we are Gator fans. So say, it's great to be a Florida Gator.
Welcome into Pod Up with Matthews in the Morning. I am once again not Shane Matthews for the third straight day. I'm Jake Hitt. I'm joined by Graham Hall of the Gainesville Sun. We're coming to you live from the Crime Prevention Security System Studios, large enough to serve you, small enough to care, aka my high school bedroom and wherever the heck Graham lives. You can also hang out with his cat. What is your cat's name, Graham?
Denzel.
Denzel, like Denzel Washington or Denzel
Curry? Yeah. Honored for the real man himself, Denzel Washington.
What is your favorite Denzel Washington?
Curry's better too. He's a good artist.
What's your favorite Denzel Washington movie, though?
Ooh, that's tough. Man. I really like Out of Time. Or like Man on Fire. Man on Fire is great.
Oh,
but Training Day, you know, Training Day is a classic. So
Training Day is a classic. Man, I didn't know Man on Fire was kind of like almost a remake of a movie back in the day called Man on Fire.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They had to get Denzel in it though.
So anyway, we're gonna talk some NFL draft. Probably our third straight day talking NIL in the transfer portal, and also some Florida Gators basketball for Graham. Graham will be with us the whole time. JC's out. He's playing golf. He thought golf was a little bit better than talking to me for the second time in 3 days. So here we are with Graham Hall. He's a great guest. I'm very excited. So, Graham, last night the Bills reached out, and they plucked Kyrie Elam in the first round. I love the pick, honestly, for them. It's a need that they had to address. And they get a guy who's, I mean, probably been one of the best cover corners in college football for 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Kyir kind of got a best of both worlds type thing. He doesn't really fall in the draft. He goes 23rd overall, a team that traded up to get him with the Baltimore Ravens. And he goes to a team that I think is going to be competitive for the near future, if not the next 4 or 5 seasons. I mean, you go with Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, and then you go to a place that really was just missing some coverage over the top in the secondary. And I think that Kyir has a great place where he can learn. White is coming back from an injury. Tre'Davious, he suffered that, I think, torn ACL last year. So many injuries in the NFL. I got to keep track of all of them. But he'll have a place where he's not going to be instantly pushed to be the starter going in. And I think that's the best-case scenario for him. You know, a guy who also – this is really interesting to me, Jake. Because of his NFL pedigree, because of his dad, because of Matt, who's – footsteps he continues to follow in, is now a first-round NFL draft pick. Kyir had no agent in the NFL draft. He represented himself with the knowledge he has. Now, it doesn't mean he's always going to represent himself, but he went into the process without typical representation, which is so interesting to me because we're in this new frontier, in a sense, of NIL where players can get representation at the college level for NIL deals. So to go into the NFL draft with no representation whatsoever is just incredibly interesting to me. You're not going to see that everywhere. Kyir is kind of a odd example of that. And to see him begin his NFL journey was very awesome last night, I got to say.
Yeah, that was I remember hearing that at Pro Day 2, and that was very, for lack of a better word, that was interesting for me to hear as well. But the man just seems to have supreme confidence in himself and what he knows. And he just every single time they ask, like, hey, that's pretty, you know, that's pretty big. It's a pretty gutsy thing to do. He's like, he kept emphasizing that he wasn't doing it by himself, that it was his team that he'd had around him, some mentors, some other people, some financial advisors, other people he had hired, you know, in lieu of an agent that kind of is, you know, providing that advice and that mentorship that he needs. But I got, like I said, I think the pick's good. Bleacher Report gives it a B. I believe Pete Prisco of CBS Sports gave it a B+. So I think that everybody agrees they addressed a need there. I think the concern with some people was tackling, but he's a cornerback, so how much tackling will he actually, you know, need to do? But this is a good stat that Bleacher Report actually pulled. No Power 5 cornerback performed better than Elam over the last three seasons. According to Pro Football Focus, led all Power 5 corners by allowing a 55.6 passer rating into his coverage.
Yeah, no one threw it. I mean, no one threw it Kyer last year. I think that is kind of one of the things that we don't talk about too much. He had the injury, and during the first couple games of the season, you saw teams, FAU, USF, kind of make the mistake to throw at him, and no other teams made that mistake the rest of the year. You saw teams actively scheme away from his side of the field. So I do think that NFL executives and scouts don't tend to read into the numbers from this past season as much as from his sophomore year, where he had 39 tackles, a fumble recovery, a couple interceptions, was playing in a system that I think had another corner alongside him in Marco Wilson, who was able to fill in some gaps, and they had more experience. So Kyer, I think, was more tested as a sophomore. So I would think NFL teams would use that body of work more so than his junior year, where he was kind of really on an island and not really getting a whole lot of things on film that he could put for NFL teams to scout. That, I think, was also kind of a sign of respect from the rest of the conference that, oh, we already are considering this guy a first rounder. And so I think that also has to play into it as well.
Yeah, I think I also read that he might have been the draft position might have been a product of how his team did in his final season. You know, when your team goes 6-7 and has the problems that they had last year, it doesn't really get you a lot of screen time. It doesn't really get you a lot of attention from a national standpoint. I mean, you can still be a good prospect and scouts can love you and teams can love you, but you're not going to get the national hype like an Aiden Hutchinson got, or Jordan Davis, or a Kayvon Thibodeau, you know, those kind of guys. So also your Carolina Panthers, they picked last night. What do you think of the pick?
You know, I think it makes a whole lot of sense to go offensive line, especially after seeing, and this is probably a good segue, especially seeing how the quarterback position played out in the NFL draft. There were a lot of people that were looking at the Carolina Panthers, another NFC South team, and I know it rivals a lot of teams that Florida fans like, and the Atlanta Falcons and the Tampa Bay Bucks, Saints too as well, kind of a Southeast conference there. The Panthers need a quarterback. I think that everyone knows that. Sam Darnold is not really necessarily the quarterback of the future. Many people thought that they could reach on Malik Willis and take him with that sixth overall pick. I think now we can sit back here Friday morning and say that would have been a horrible decision, because you'd then see 26 other teams pass on him, and he's sitting there in the green room at Las Vegas. I mean, poor guy has to spend his night in Las Vegas one night longer, dressed up so nice. You know, he showed up thinking that he was going to be finding his next NFL home, so, as well as N'Kobe Dean and a lot of other guys did. That just isn't the way the NFL always goes. There's talent to be found in the second round, the third round, and Malik is going to have to wait. But as you can see, taking an offensive lineman, whether it was Evan Neal, whether it was the guy that took from NC State, whose name I'm not even going to attempt to butcher here, I think that just makes a whole lot of sense, because you need to get an offensive lineman. Even if you're a guy like Lamar Jackson, I know all these quarterbacks become so obsessed with, oh, I need weapons. I need to take the heat off of me in the open field. You're going to need offensive linemen to have success at this level. So I think before you can address the quarterback position, you really have to address the offensive line. Or if you have a quarterback that you think is going to be contingent upon a strong offensive line, you have to go for the offensive line to really put them in the best position to have success, so you can know, okay, this is not the guy of the future. We can move on, because you've addressed all the other pieces. I think that's what Carolina is doing in this draft, so they can know once and for all Sam Darnold is or is not the guy on the roster.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, quarterbacks wanting weapons. We saw a ton of wide receivers come off the board this first round. I think everybody was talking about, look, this is a sign of where the game is going and how much more emphasis is being put on that position. I mean, you saw what we saw, three wide receivers go in a row.
Back to back.
And it was, what, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Jameson Williams, one of those teams moving up to get him.
Yeah, you know, and then, yeah, Jameson Williams getting moved up, the Lions going up to get him after already taking, you know, Hutchinson second overall. I think that that is just, that's huge in my mind. I think that wide receivers are kind of going through a renaissance right now, I guess would be the term, where they are commanding more money than defensive backs are right now because of, it's kind of like baseball in a sense. The vertical passing game has become so boom or bust, and having a vertical threat, speedy guy who can get away really can win you games, and teams are willing to pay for that right now, not even just through the draft, but they'll also re-sign guys. So you've seen Devontae Adams, you've seen A.J. Brown get that $100 million, $57 million guaranteed deal at the disappointment of Titans fans last night. That is just, I think, where the league is moving. And so if you were a wide receiver on the cusp in this draft, it would have behooved you greatly to test the waters, in my mind, because of how valuable the position is right now, how lucrative it is to play that, and how much it seems to be just a need right now in the league. And I mean, even a guy like Marquise Brown, that should tell you how much they are at a premium. I mean, getting the same trade parameters as A.J. Brown, I think is pretty shocking. I think the Ravens won that trade pretty easily there because I think you can find good wide receiver talent often in the later rounds of the draft. So some of these teams that are reaching on guys in the first round, taking guys with the first round pick, you better be absolutely 100% sure that this guy is going to be a starter in the National Football League for several seasons. Otherwise, you should wait and take a guy who maybe plays at a mid-major school but has great stats and great measurables and is it looking for a chance to break out in the next level. But a lot of teams clearly are prioritizing high round NFL draft picks with wide receiver position because that is popular right now. Money talks.
Yeah, and there's an effect that's really – led to the continuation of a theme that we've seen over the last few years. I'll tell you about that in a second. First, I'll tell you about South State Bank. At South State Bank, we understand that small businesses need a community business partner that they can rely on. South State has four convenient locations in Alachua County. South State Bank, banking forward, member FDIC. So it's very funny that we saw this run on wide receivers in the first round, because then that kind of left the Green Bay Packers holding the bag a little bit. Because I don't think they wanted to take, you know, a wide receiver at the pick they had, because that would have probably been a reach for them. So they end up taking a linebacker, which they definitely needed. But they ended up taking not N'Kobe Dean from Georgia, but his teammate in Quay Walker, which is very interesting for me. And then they come back in the 28th pick, and they're like, people are like, oh, this is going to be Pickens. And they double down and they get Devontae Wyatt, a defensive lineman from that Georgia defense. So it was kind of funny to see the continuation of that. The Packers just refused to get Aaron Rodgers any help in the first round in terms of offensive talent. And that run on wide receivers definitely, I think, probably had an effect on that. It's also part of a record for Georgia. I believe five defensive players is the most ever taken off a team in the first round.
Yeah, that should, I think, tell people right there how dominant that Georgia defense really was last year. I think that we saw that multiple times last year, even when people were saying, oh, Michigan was going to jump all over Georgia. I think teams that had played that defense were sitting here saying, hey, this is something like people have never seen at this level. The amount of five stars that they took a couple years ago and now have developed them into first and second string guys. I mean, some of the names we didn't even see represented, like I said, N'Kobe Dean, Will Anderson, not even eligible for the draft and could be the consensus number one overall pick next year. That Georgia defense is going to continue to break records. And I don't think we all should have been really surprised that it was rewarded in so many number one picks. But I think that it also accentuates the talent disparity in college football right now. Jake. I mean, so many people sit there and say, well, how do you know that the SEC is really the best conference? Well, let's look at it. Georgia had 5 first-round draft picks. The Pac-12 combined had 4. The Big 12 didn't have a first-round pick. So one team from the SEC, and then you factor in the Kyir Elams and Evan Neals, the SEC dominated the first round once again, while 2 of the other Power 5 conferences combined didn't have more picks than Georgia, the national champion. So when anyone sits here and says, well, how do you know the talent is better in the Southeastern Conference? I think you can easily point to the NFL draft numbers and say, well, you know, last year Florida just played against, what, 9 first-round NFL draft picks, and there's levels to this.
Yeah. Hey, look, it's not like the quality is going to stop coming because we got the second and third round tonight. We're talking to known SEC shill and Gainesville Sun 4 Gators reporter Graham Hall. I'll tell you about Celebration Point. It's where Gators come to celebrate with premium brands like Dave & Buster's, Bass Pro Shops, Hotel Indigo, Medici's, Kilwin's, and the HBC's restaurant, Spurrier's Gridiron Grill, where you can get 50% off a bottle of wine every Wednesday. We will see you at Celebration Point, where Gators come to celebrate. So we mentioned this Georgia defense. One of those players ended up going number 1 overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars, Graham. I think a surprising pick for people. I think there are people who probably don't like it and people who do. That's with any draft pick, but I definitely feel like, especially with this one, taking a guy who is built like an edge rusher but played mostly inside and a little bit outside for this Georgia defense, and he really played that position in that, what is the quote-unquote spread defense, very well for them. So much so, he did so well that it rocketed him all the way up to the number 1 overall pick in terms of the draft process. So I'm just interested to see what your take is on this. Should they have gone with Trayvon Walker, or maybe gone with somebody who was getting most of the flowers this entire season, whether it be Aiden Hutchinson or Kayvon Thibodeau? Or even Evan Neal.
Well, I'd like to think that if Will Anderson was eligible, that the Jaguars would not have selected Trayvon Walker and they would have taken Will Anderson. I would like to think that. I'm pretty interested by the Trayvon Walker assessment because one of the strongest suits for him, I think his malleability, ability to play multiple positions in a 4-3. I mean, he can play inside, outside. Just being able to play kind of like position, I think is his strongest suit because you really can use him in a variety of ways and disguise what he's going to do in the defense. It's very similar, though, in my mind to the argument kind of against Zach Carter, Florida defensive lineman. I know a lot of teams come out here and praise his accessibility, his ability to play a wide range of positions. But in my mind, when you haven't really locked down one position, honed in on one position, or you're in between, in a sense, maybe changing your playing weight or attempting to change the way you play at this level, that can kind of scare some teams off in a sense and think that you're not this wide-ranging type player that many people want to think you are. For so long, the discussion was about Aiden Hutchinson being the number 1 overall pick, and I really kind of think that maybe this is a little superstitious here, Jake, but I'm of the belief that teams float these names out there to the media to get public reception, to see what people are going to think about the number 1 pick. And as I think you saw, it floated for so long about Aiden Hutchinson being the number 1 pick, you really didn't see a strong buzz from Jaguars fans. Not saying it was the wrong pick, but it just kind of was underwhelming in a sense. And that may not be anything to do with Hutchinson or his long-term ability. But I think that when you go from Trevor Lawrence, potential game-changing quarterback, franchise changer, in a sense, hopefully, for that franchise, you know, you're going to expect to do that once again with the same round pick. And I don't know if Hutchinson, Walker, Malik Willis, Derek Stingley, Evan Neal, Kayvon Thibodeau, are any of these guys franchise changers? I don't know. I don't know. Evan Neal wasn't even ultimately the first offensive lineman off the board. So I sit here and wonder, you know, was this a draft where there was no clear-cut consensus number one pick. Hutchinson was the guy for so long, and then you ultimately have this kind of shakeup at the top. I was so sure that Evan Neal was going to be a top five pick, and then he falls to, what, seventh? So there's a lot of unpredictability involved in the NFL draft, but I definitely believe that the Jaguars spent the last couple of months floating the possibility of taking Hutchinson, and then when they never got comfortable with it, the fan base never got comfortable with it, they never were assuaged of any fears they had. They had to kind of go with a guy that just helped lead the record-breaking defense. And I think that that makes it the safer pick, ultimately, than Hutchinson, who, while he did look good on film, I do think there are some concerns about him at the next level. With Walker, you have the proximity to home, you have playing at a high level, you have a really good health record. I think that for Jaguar fans, they can sit here and be like, this pick, even if it's not the best player in the first round, this is a very safe top 10 pick in my mind.
Mm-hmm. And they also went defense later on in round two and got middle linebacker or inside linebacker Devin Lloyd, which I think could be work out for them well. He could kind of, he's kind of a tweener too. You mentioned Trayvon Walker and his ability as almost cross-trained inside and outside. Booger McFarland mentioned that, look, he's definitely not going to play inside all the time. They're going to put him out there. He kept referring to him as a Ferrari. They're going to put that Ferrari on the road and let's see how fast it can go. They also, like I said, went Devin Lloyd, who I think led that Utah defense last year. So obviously they feel like the defense has been an issue. And went with that. I do want to know, Graham, do you see any Gators coming out tonight? Do you hear any names for any Zachary Carters or Damian Pierce's getting their names called?
Yeah, you know, kind of what I said about Zach Carter, his ability to play multiple positions, that's going to be a strength for him. And I think he could be picked near the end of the second round. I think it's a possibility. But in terms of tonight, I think that you will see his name called in the third round, whether it's early on, midway. I think that he's a guy who has third round potential, blue chip prospect, almost went to Clemson, Tampa guy, has played at the highest level, could have come out last year, has been used in a variety of different ways, let's say that. And the same thing that I think worked against Kyer Elam, you know, if you're an NFL team, you have to assess the scheme aspect of Zachary Carter. I think very interestingly, did this guy play at his best in Todd Grantham's scheme? I think a lot of people would say no, because of the way it was set up, how Florida performed last year. To say that we saw the best of Zach Carter and Kyer Elam, I know that fans already know that's not true with Damian Pierce, another guy who could go in the third round as well, just gets 100 carries last year. To say that any three of those guys had their best season with the Gators last year, I just think would be a little bit disingenuous. So we have to really factor it off of their potential at the next level rather than what they've done. I know that kind of seems obvious in a sense, but when you look at Zach Carter, again, I already made the comparison to Walker, can play multiple positions. A guy goes down, he can fill in on the interior, at the edge, you name it. Is slimmed down, has good size, has good ball skills, gets to the quarterback, physical. They're not a premium of guys who can do what he can do. I think that you will see a team take him in the third round. I think it'll be early in the third round. And even though there were no running backs taken in the first round of the NFL draft, and Damian Pierce, I think, is just sitting there around like the ninth or 10th best running back in this draft, I think that you will see a slew of running backs go at some point, kind of similar to what we saw with wide receivers, where teams start realizing that they're going to have to take some of these guys just to have skill positions on the field, even if you're going to think about using them at the Z spot or have them, you know, work as wideouts. I mean, look at, you know, a guy like Brandon Powell, who did everything that he could to make it to the next level, whether it was lining up in the slot, lining up in the backfield. That is what I think a lot of guys are going to have to do at the next level. And having a guy like Damian Pierce, who has shown the ability to catch out of the backfield, bruise, goal line situations, two, three down back, his malleability, to use that word again, I think is the best feature for him and Zach Carter. And I think you'll see both of those guys go in the third round tonight. If they fall into the fourth round, nothing wrong with that whatsoever. I think that you'll see a couple other Gators go in some late rounds, Gene DeLance as well, one that many people aren't expecting. That clip of him locking up Jermaine Johnson, the FSU edge rusher, is making the rounds again from their game back in the regular season. So there are going to be certainly some Gators that go in the next 48 hours. Where they go and whether they find the best fits, that's the intriguing part to me, certainly.
Yeah, don't worry. Jermaine got the best of him several times in that game, too. Let me tell you about Chris Doering Mortgage, and then we'll go to break, and we'll be back with Graham Hall, the Gainesville Sun. At Chris Doering Mortgage, they do mortgage lending right, helping home buyers throughout Gainesville and North Central Florida. Call Chris Doering Mortgage today at 352-244-0840. We have Graham Hall, the Gainesville Sun, on. We'll be taking a break, and we'll be right back.
We want to take this moment to thank all our sponsors who keep the show going and pay the bills. Crime Prevention Security Systems, large enough to serve you, small enough to care. Titan MRI, Gainesville's only locally owned and operated MRI facility. Meldon Law, won't back down. Peachland Dental, Gator Nation's first choice for dentistry in Port Charlotte. Comfort Temp, comfort is our business, peace of mind is our promise. QC Kinetics, live pain-free with QC Kinetics. Our Gridiron sponsors are Auto ER, UF Bookstores, Celebration Point Town Center, South State Bank, Chris Doering Mortgage, Silverback Concrete Co., Ruse Ogra Agent, State Farm Insurance. Some of our touchdown sponsors are Campus USA Credit Union, Adams Rib Company, Doreen Wiebe Realtor, Caldwell Banker, M.M. Parish, Gator Dominoes, Celebrate Primary Care, Gator Bait Media, Style Cuts, Big Mills Cheesesteaks, Ironwood Golf Course. If you are interested in promoting your business on the show, visit potupwithshane.com and click the advertise button. Again, thank you to all the great businesses that support the show. If you like what we are doing here, make sure you follow us and support the businesses that support us.
Pro football legend Emmett Smith understands your joint pain.
It does not surprise me that there are a ton of people out there that's in pain.
That's why Emmett is such a proponent of QC Kinetics, offering real lasting joint pain relief with non-surgical, all-natural biologic treatments.
Whether it's a joint pain, ankle pain, shoulder pain, neck pain, back pain, hip pain, any kind of pain, the body eventually will break down when it's under that much stress.
That stress can cloud your judgment to the point that you'll just say yes to the scalpel or yes to another prescription of pain pills. But maybe it's time for a second opinion from QC Kinetics.
The reason why I would recommend this is because the natural biologics that QC Kinetics is providing you give your body a chance to naturally heal itself.
Restorative, regenerative solutions are here. Get lasting relief and live your life.
Call QC Kinetics, 352-400-4550. That's 352-400-4550. QC Kinetics, 352-400-4550.
Welcome back to Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning. I am still joined by Gainesville Sun Florida Gators reporter Graham Hall and his lovely movie posters in the background and his fantastic Bob Ross hair as well. He's probably got a couple paintings somewhere in his house. Let me tell you about Peachland Dentistry before we get started here, Graham, with our next segment. At Peachland Dentistry, they are Gator Nation's number one choice for dentistry in Port Charlotte and surrounding areas. Visit them at peachlanddental.com and join us on Friday for our Peachland Dentistry JC and the QB weekend picks. Obviously, those aren't going to happen today because, well, JC is not here and the QB hasn't been here for 3 days now. So it's just Graham and I shooting the breeze. So, Graham, moving over from the NFL draft, we've had some comments about Scott Strickland and this Tony Amato story that's come out of Gator Women's Soccer. Peyton Titus, if you haven't seen, broke the story for WUFT, the on-campus news station. So shout out to student journalism. Always got to support those people. Graham and myself were student reporters once. And so, Graham, this is the second time we've seen Scott Strickland have to get rid of a coach because of turmoil within their own program in terms of their behavior.
Yeah, it's certainly concerning, let's call it that. I think that anytime you replace a woman sports coach that was also previously coached by a woman with a man, you are taking, I think, a big risk. And I hate to make it like that cut and dry or boil it down to that. But in this day and age, I think you really need to make sure that you're hiring a coach who can connect with your players, and gender is a part of that, absolutely, in those interpersonal relationships. And it's clear here that the pattern between the Cameron Neubauer thing and the Tony Amato thing is that you have a head coach that was not, however they were talking to players, they were not building relationships in the right way. And that aspect of it is so incredibly important. And people may scoff at that and say, well, you know, they're here to get a scholarship and win games and yada, yada, yada. The relationship building aspect is more important in my mind, if you ask me, because that's how you develop team chemistry and player between coach trust. I mean, players don't just innately trust their new head coach and come in believing that everything they do is correct because they've been well coached before and they have professional aspirations. They see how it should look. And so they can see red flags and they can see the way their teammates are talked to or other teammates are talked to around the country. And they can see, they can compare and they can reach out and say, hey, does your coach talk to you about this? Do they do this? And when you are able to have so much clarity of the full context of the situation nationally, you can sit there and be like, well, what's happening to us is not the way it's happening here and it's not happening there. And you start to realize that you're in a situation where your coach is not treating you the way that other people are being treated. And in this day and age with the transfer portal and with, let's also talk about the context of Florida, Florida just being a year removed, not even from the Cameron Neubauer thing. I think that you have this situation where everyone should have been cognizant of the fact that you can't act like this to athletes, male or women, men or women. You can't act like this whatsoever. So to have this situation again, where a coach seemingly didn't get that message, felt comfortable talking about body image issues in a abusive way that made athletes doubt their physical prowess and their ability to play the game, I think that you start to wonder, okay, what are we doing wrong here at an organizational level? And this is where I give my opinion, and I'm no expert whatsoever. But it appears that if you look for a pattern between all the hires, between Neubauer, Amato, Billy Napier, and I could be wrong here with this, but we've heard no public mention of a search firm. And a search firm, the way that they're designed, a lot of people say, well, why would you spend $400,000 if you're an athletic director who is plugged in, knows all these things? Why would you use a search firm? Maybe it's a sign that you don't really know the landscape as well as you think you do, college athletics. And the reason you hire a search firm is so that they can take the fall if you miss anything. If you're interviewing a candidate who there were previous allegations about that maybe would have dissuaded you from making that hire. That was true with both Neubauer and Amato. If you look at both of them, Cameron Neubauer had former players at Belmont University who were alleging that he was the same way when they were there. And it took Florida women's basketball players just calling those former players for them to readily admit to what they were in for, what Neubauer was actually like. Then the same thing with Amato. In 2020, multiple athletes sent letters to the Arizona AD discussing Amato's behavior and how they felt. And then Florida a year later comes and hires him away. A search firm, theoretically, would have caught these things and stop Florida from hiring them. That's the due diligence aspect. When there's a point in your career, when you've spent 35 years in the building and you think that you make all these right decisions to get here, you can become a little bit too sure of yourself that you know who is the right person to lead the program for you. If I'm Scott Strickland, I would look and say, hey, maybe I'm not the right decision maker. And that moving forward, it would save me a huge headache, reputation-wise, and a situation like this, to shell out the extra money and hire a search firm rather than relying on internal ADs. Because clearly, there have been some oversights, let's call it that, in the search process for new coaches that a search firm would fix. Either that or Florida is going to need to change their internal search policies, in my opinion, so that this doesn't happen again, so that anything from the recent past could be caught that could maybe dissuade Florida from giving one of these coaches $1 million.
Yeah, it just seems like it just seems like some of the three of the four coaches he's hired just have not panned out, and it's just gone down in almost a disastrous way for him. You know, whether it be Cam Neubauer and Tony Amato, or with the way Dan Mullen had this sort of kind of meteoric rise and then almost equally just catastrophic fall to where now there's another guy that Scott Strickland had to hire. And honestly, it's a hire he needs to nail. It's very interesting because I think now this is opens up the conversation again between what is coaching and what is, I mean, I don't want to say abuse. What is coaching and what is not coaching? What is behavior that affects the mental health of your players and doesn't form a good relationship with you? Because some people will read that, oh, he was, you know, your coach, you're supposed to be concerned with the physical aptitude of your players and their diets and things like that. But on the other hand, you'll say, or people will say, yeah, but not to the point to where it jeopardizes them mentally as people, right? And I think that's kind of the gist that I got from the story from Peyton. People can find it on WFT and read it for themselves and make their own conclusions. But I think we're getting now, especially with the transfer portal, we're getting now into where, you know, we've always talked about how the coaching has to be different now just because of the kind of people that are coming around and are becoming young people, and just the kinds of minds that we have now in today's day and age, and things are just changing standards wise, right? So now this almost is once again putting it more into the light and emphasizing that, you know, the way coaches kind of have to behave or have to go about their business as coaches and make sure their former relationships with players, because I mean, 1 second and boom, they're gone, they're out the door.
Yeah, you know, so many people are also coming out here and being like, well, isn't it a coach's job to discuss weight, nutrition, push athletes to get in better shape? Isn't that a coach's job? I see that a lot. And I, let's clear that up. It's not impossible for a coach to talk about the player's physical stature and well-being. But have you ever heard the phrase stay in your lane? There's a reason there's a team nutritionist. And there's a reason these people have degrees and doctorates and PhDs, because the coaches are not experts in nutrition as much as they want to think that they are. There's a reason that they have professionals around them. So according to one of the allegations in Peyton's story, you had a situation where Amato would disagree and shame athletes who were eating nutritionist approved food, receiving ketchup and saying it was empty calories. That is a quick way for a head coach to tell on themselves. There's a saying that you should be smart enough to know what you don't know. And if I was a head coach, I think a lot of head coaches do take this approach, so it's not novel. You don't want to act like the all-knowing. Because when you do, when you eventually make a mistake, do something incorrectly, your reputation takes a significant hit. So wouldn't you rather stay in your lane and make decisions based off what you have studied, become an expert in? And I think that that's not nutrition for head coaches. You know, you don't see Billy Napier coming out here and saying, yeah, he needs to lose more and more and more weight. He needs to, you know, you don't see that very often. And Becky Burley, when she was at the helm for 26 years at Florida Soccer, I mean, she talked to players about their weights, but the way she did it was very insightful. Let me call it that. So here's how it would work with Becky Burley. You'd meet in her office once a month or once a week, depending on who you were. And she would ask you how you're doing. How would you assess your own performance? What ways do you think you can improve? And then if she thought that you could get in better shape, she would show you clips of how you were running on the field. And she would say something along the lines of, do you think that this is the best? Do you think you are capable of running faster? Do you think that you could be at a better rate. And I think most of us would sit there and be like, well, yes, I think I can definitely do better. I think I can definitely do better. And then Becky would turn it around on the athlete. And she would say, well, what changes do you think you can make in your life that would improve your physical performance? And then often the athlete would sit there and say, I can work out harder. I need to get in better shape. It really made for a period of self-reflection that players were comfortable with, because they didn't feel as if the head coach was going to admonish them or cut their playing time or make them feel bad about themselves. Having someone who was capable of doing that was also part of why Amato's approach has been so poorly received, because it is such a 180 from Becky's hands-on, considerate approach. To kind of take this approach of, hey, I know what you should be doing for everyone physically, same nutrition plan, to go from this individual meet with me, talk about your performance and how it relates to your health, that is just such a 180. And to not understand, this is where I'm not trying to criticize Scott Strickland here, but to not understand how adored that aspect of Becky's coaching was, the off the field aspect, I do think that kind of shows a, I don't want to say ignorance here, but maybe just something that flew under the radar, because it wasn't just her wins and losses why she was in games. It wasn't just the national championship from 1998. It was the way that she continued to relate to players, and players didn't dislike her even when the results of the season were undesirable. I think that's a key part to remember. You can have losing as long as players feel as if they're improving and they feel like the program is heading in the right direction. That clearly was not the case with Amato. And we throw out all the other pieces, then wins and losses are going to often determine whether you return. And I think that is a huge part of the component here. There was no other reason to keep Amato here if he didn't have the interpersonal relationships and all these things. If he had a 4-win record in 20 games and didn't build relationships with players, then it's an easy decision in my mind, because you have to do one or the other. You have to win, or you have to build team chemistry that makes people think we're going to win here really soon.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Amato having the worst record in Florida soccer history, I believe. Also a ton of players in the transfer portal. He's got a high turnover rate, but you know, something else that's also affecting the transfer portal, and we'll talk about it in a second. I got to tell you about Comfort Temp really quick. With this day in sports history, Graham, this day in sports history, Bo Jackson was drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the lonely Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And you know what he did? He decided to go play baseball instead. Comfort Temp. Comfort is our business. Peace of mind is our promise. Comfort Temp is now hiring team members with all levels of experience, great culture and benefits, and opportunity for growth. $1,000 sign-on bonus for qualified positions. Graham, if you want to make a little extra cash, definitely in your wheelhouse. Call today and learn more about a career with Comfort Temp Company, 352-376-2366. So I mentioned that the transfer portal was also affected by something else, because something that came out around last night was Isaiah Wong. Isaiah Wong is a guard for the University of Miami. They just had a fantastic Elite Eight run as an 11 seed, Wong being a key difference maker in that team. His agent has come out and said, if he doesn't get enough compensation, he's going into the transfer portal for his NIL. And this is pretty interesting considering their mega donor, John Ruiz, and setting up Life Wallet and all this stuff, and him publicizing all of this. And now Isaiah Wong's representation is saying, hey, this guy wants more money or he's leaving. And I think I mentioned this when I was talking to Brent Baird yesterday. It's almost harder to manage a college basketball team now than it is a professional basketball team. Because now with NIL and a transfer portal, you got 13 guys on one-year deals. Whereas a professional basketball team, you got some guys that are locked in. They can't really leave unless you get rid of them. But here, I mean, guys can leave just boom, 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 boom for no reason. And this is putting into the limelight that NIL really isn't NIL at this rate. It's pay for play. Let's just be honest about it.
You know, I think that this is kind of like a reap what you sow type thing, if you ask me, because for so long, the year-to-year determination of a scholarship was up to the coaches, right? There's no such thing as a 4-year scholarship. if you are underperforming and you're on scholarship, the coach has always been able to tell you, listen, it's not going to work out here. You're not going to play. You should consider transferring to another level. And that kid would have to sit out and forgo a year of their eligibility because a coach thought that they could play at this level and it's not working out. The coaches had the power. Now, you are seeing things change. And I think a lot of people are struggling to grapple with it, especially coaches. Because now players can really capitalize on performances like they've never been able to before. Think of it. When you used to be a fan of the sport and a three-star would overperform, people would really like that. They'd get excited and say, hey, we hit on a good guy. You know, they're outperforming their recruiting status. But what did that really mean for the player? Nothing. Nothing, right? Doesn't mean anything. They may have gotten less money to go to that university under the table, and now they're performing at ways similar that everyone around them had gotten paid, you know, theoretically. And there was no recourse for them before now. And you also would bring in guys to the transfer portal until this year that you knew were maybe getting some deals under the table and were going to just come in to boost the program while the guys who were already there got nothing except a pat on the back, you know, let's do it next season. Now you're having players, I think, try and capitalize on performance, which makes a lot of sense. But you're going to also see blowbacks from these NIL deals that you also see at the National Football League and in the NBA. Players consistently outperform their contracts in the NBA. Steph Curry signed a 4-year, $40 million contract when he had all those ankle problems and then became one of the NBA's best players. But he was wildly underpaid. They didn't change his deal. They paid him the next year when he could sign an extension. But when you're outperforming your deal and you've signed a contract, that's kind of the reality of the future. At the next level, you may underperform your contract. You may outperform your contract. But you previously agreed to be paid this regardless of performance. Now, a lot of that changes when you feel like you outperform, or that people who are going to have similar levels of performance to you get better deals because the market is changing. I can understand that that is causing some ire for Isaiah Wong and his NIL agent. You got to also think NIL agents have a chance to get, I mean, I've heard anywhere from 5% to 10% to 15% of some of these deals. And you have to remember that's their biggest window to make some money because there are so few NFL agents, and if you're an NFL agent, you're going to make about 0.5%, half of 1% of your player's lifetime earnings. So you could be an agent at the college level and make, you know, good money, a higher percentage, if you are pushing the guy who's you're representing to go out there and try and broker a new deal for yourselves. That is just the new reality. And the NCAA has kind of just said, we're not doing anything about this. Let everyone figure it all out for themselves. And, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll monitor inducement, but you can really bring guys into the transfer portal with NIL deals. That is, there's nothing stopping players from getting induced to come to a school through NIL. How the rest of the team grapples with it, not getting a new deal after they have an Elite Eight season, that is something that programs are going to have to work on for and figure out for the next couple of years.
Well, I think also it's not just it being used as a tool or a negotiating technique to get, you know, more compensation. It's also, I think, the reason that the negotiating is happening, because you look at a guy, you know, Nigel Pack signs a 2-year deal, $800,000 with Miami plus a car, you know, through Ruiz's life wallet thing that he's set up. And I'm sure Isaiah Wong looks at that. And, you know, there's a quote from his agent saying something like, you know, him leading this team or being a key contributor for an Elite Eight team should have him making as much or more as an incoming transfer who hasn't contributed. And so that's also to where this is working both ways. You know, guys coming on because of NIL deals are forcing guys still already on the team who want more compensation or at least some compensation. It's funny, though, too, because Ruiz is very much willing to go to war about this with Wong. He texted a message to ESPN saying, Isaiah is under contract. He has been treated by LifeWallet exceptionally well. If that is what he decides, I wish him well. However, I do not, in all caps, renegotiate. I cannot disclose the amount, but what I can say is that he was treated very fairly. I'll tell you about that. I'll ask you about that in a second, but let me tell you about QC Kinetics. If you've got knees, joint pain, shoulder pain, hip pain, or back pain that won't go away, you need to check out QC Kinetics for long-lasting relief, not surgery, drugs, or downtime. Schedule your free consultation at QC Kinetics, 352-400-4550. Call today, QC Kinetics, 352-400-4550. Oof, sorry, was reading and reading at the same time. So, Graham, I'll ask you about this. We have this very interesting stuff going on with mega donors now feuding with players.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that Ruiz and whether it's the Gator Collective, you know, a lot of these schools are going to prefer to do this under the table, you know, behind closed doors rather than out in the open. And Ruiz already kind of has taken the lead on announcing a lot of these figures without thinking of the backlash. I mean, announcing that 2-year, $800,000 deal for him was, I think, you know, wise for them to say, look at what we're doing, but also you're also costing yourself a whole lot of money because everyone else is going to want that. And I don't know if he fully thought that through at the time. I mean, there's a reason you haven't seen Colin Castleton's NIL figures publicized. You don't know how much each athlete gets from the Gator Collective to do interviews. You don't know how much Anthony Richardson's deals are with Dodge and what he's making on that. And there's a lot that people just don't know, because once you have all that information out there, you're going to have someone thinking, oh, I want that. And I don't know if Ruiz, in his desperation to get the U back, really thought that through over the positive PR spin of, look, I'm giving millions of dollars away to athletes. That is something that I think a lot of people haven't assessed. You know, let's go back to Kawasi Reeves. Colin Castleton returns, gets an NIL deal, and then Reeves enters the transfer portal, thinks about entering the transfer portal. I mean, it wouldn't be off base to think that he may have had a similar thought to Wong. This is a guy that people want me to come back to the program. I could go to Georgia to play for my coach and just, you know, close to my hometown in Macon. They're going to have to pay to bring me back. That is the new reality, and it's happening everywhere. Miami just decided to be so messy about it right now.
Right. Let me tell you about Ruse Ogra. Ruse Ogra State Farm Office is a team of dedicated insurance professionals ready to help life go right with the right insurance options for you and your family. Visit ograinsurance.com or call them at 352-240-1779. So, Grandma, we're wrapping up here. Just wanted to thank you for your time. Is there anything you got in the tank right now that might be getting unloaded here in the near future that you want people to read?
I'm writing a Noah Keeter feature. Encourage everyone to check it out. I wrote about Jaron Hamilton, a local PK young kid who's getting some offers. Alabama, Florida visited him this week. Minnesota offered. Guy who really stuck it out through PK. So some of those features on Gatorsports.com. We'll have some draft stuff going up as well. It's Zach Carter and Damian Pierce see their lives changed here later today. A lot of that stuff coming up on Gatorsports.com. And always my pleasure to be here talking with you, Jake. We got our podcast as well on Gator Sports. If you're interested in listening to that, we do an episode once a week. Not every morning like this, but we try and do it, man.
Yeah. Appreciate the time, Graham. Always happy to talk to you as well. He's joining us on the Titan MRI hotline today. That's what he joined us on. You can also listen to this podcast, several streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and make sure to like this on Facebook, what you're currently watching, Twitter, and YouTube. But for now, I'm Jake Hitt. It's been a great 3 days. Shane will probably be back next week, give you all his takes. You'll probably be way happier than seeing my bearded face in the morning. But for now, we're signing off. Enjoy your weekend, everyone.
We want to take this moment to thank all our sponsors who keep the show going and pay the bills. Crime Prevention Security Systems, large enough to serve you, small enough to care. Titan MRI, Gainesville's only locally owned and operated MRI facility. Meldon Law, won't back down. Eastland Dental, Gator Nation's first choice for dentistry in Port Charlotte. Comfort Temp. Comfort is our business. Peace of mind is our promise. QC Kinetics. Live pain-free with QC Kinetics. Our Gridiron sponsors are Auto ER, UF Bookstores, Celebration Point Town Center, South State Bank, Chris Doring Mortgage, Silverback Concrete Co., Ruse Ogra Agent, State Farm Insurance. Some of our touchdown sponsors are MB Listing, McDonald's of Gainesville, Okito America, 84 Lumber, Tropical Smoothie Cafe, Avera and Smith, Dowling Signs, Baker's Sporting Goods, Silver Q Billiards and Sports Bar. If you are interested in promoting your business on the show, visit potupwithshane.com and click the advertise button. Again, thank you to all the great businesses that support the show. If you like what we are doing here, make sure you follow us and support the businesses that support us.